Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts here, Dana Osman, here with my friend Chavruta and Gordon. Our daf today, Masechta Bava Metzia, daf Chaf Chet, page 28. Before we get to the new Mishnah, I want to wrap up our discussion we had yesterday about whether or not the simanim, these identifying marks on a lost object, the concept of that, is that from the Torah, is it deoraisa, or is it a rabbinic enactment, is it a derabbanan? And we basically conclude on this daf, Ella Amar Rava, Simanim De'oraita. Rava basically says that the Simanim are De'oraita. If you recall yesterday in Chav Zayin, there was a very lengthy discussion about this question with proofs brought basically in both ways. But Rava finally comes here and concludes the Simanim are basically a De'oraita. And how does he know this? He bases it on the Pasuk from Devarim chapter 22, verse 2, Dichtiv, Vaya Imcha Ad Rosh Achicha Oto. Right, so the pasuk, you know, one way to interpret it would be, right, and it shall be with you until your brother claims it. That's what the word drosh means. Would it enter your mind, the Gemara asked, that he would give, the finder should give the lost item to the claimant before he claims it? Ella drashehu im ramayhu, o eino ramay. So what does it mean? That word drosh means that you have to sort of check or scrutinize him to see if he's a liar or not a liar, if he's a cheater or, you know, not a cheater. Lav b'simanim, right? So what is that? Isn't that with simanim? Shma mina, learn from this. So Rava basically says, this is how we know that this is actually a Torah law. Rava goes on to say, Amar Rava, im tim se lamar simanim de'oraita. So he goes, if you want to say that the distinguishing marks are a Torah law, and then the Gemara interjects her and says, im tim se lamar, right? What do you mean by saying, Rava, if you want to say? Ha-pashile simanim de'oraita. Didn't you just say, Rava, that they are de'oraita? So what does the imtep se'lamar mean? Mishum te'ekalamemar k'deshaninan. So it's the Rava basically saying, he puts this in of saying, if you want to say, because he understands that there are some who think that you could refute that it's a de'oraita, as we saw in yesterday's daf on Chav Zayin Amud Bet. And so therefore, he wants to say that, okay, there you could reject it as well. And the reason for that is because what it basically talked about is that maybe you do it on the basis of witnesses and not on the basis of these simanim. So Rava's kind of admitting in a way, right, that it doesn't necessarily have to be, we don't necessarily have to understand this, the simanim are a deoraisa, even though he holds that it is. From here, the Gemara basically goes on to talk about how, you know, maybe what it is that you can use simanim, or the other option is you can have witnesses come who say that the object owns to the person who's claiming the object. And that would basically be the two ways, you know, to prove that an object belongs to you. But the point that I wanted to emphasize is that Rava lands on, and the Gemara seems to basically agree, that it is a deoraisa, the concept of simanim.
Okay, I'm going to move on to the Mishnah now. And this Mishnah is finally going to deal with part of the process of how do we actually return this lost item. The amatach, right? Until when somebody finds a lost object, how long do they need to sort of make it known that they have this lost object? Which sort of makes sense, because it can't be that it's like you hold on to this lost object for 10 years. Akadesha yadu bo shchenav. Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir has the first opinion, which says that until the neighbors know of it. Now, it doesn't give an actual length of time. I don't think it's really long, right? It's sort of like, you know, you pass your neighborhood signs and you let people know. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda Galim, Va'acha Harega Haron Shiva Yamim. So Rabbi Yehuda has this opinion, which says you have to do it for a cycle of three holidays, through the three holidays when you go up to the temple. Now, what's interesting here, and Anne, I know you'll talk about this a little bit more, that, you know, it seems to be that, you know, there seems to be a temple-centric, Yerushalayim-centric piece to this, right? Like, the idea is you're going to bring this lost item up to the temple or sort of make it known there in Yerushalayim that you have the lost object. Again, if you live, like, 2 days away from Yerushalayim and you find it in your town, I'm not sure what Yerushalayim has to do with it or the regalim, but I think it's interesting. Because, in other words, why make it known where you found it. But, you know, so if you find it, let's say, so you would have to wait through Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, and then 7 days after Sukkot. again, the length of time will be different. Like if you find it Sukkot time, let's say you find it in Tishrei, so it actually would be a longer time because then you would do, it would be Sukkot, Pesach, Shavuot, and 7 days after Shavuot. So it's not a set amount of months. It's based on the calendar of how the holidays fall out. And why those 7 days? Kadei she'yelech leveito shlosha, right? Because it gives the owner time to go back to his home, and presumably the farthest way someone traveled was 3 days. V'yachzor shlosha, right? He gets home, he realizes that he lost something. Then he goes back to Yerushalayim, v'yachriz yom achad. And then he sort of looks around for a day to see if anybody actually found that object. I have a lot of questions on this Mishnah. I think that's a very interesting process. I'm just going to read the beginning of the Gemara here. Tana shchina aveda. Right. First, the Tana taught, right? Rabbi Meir taught that you have to proclaim that you lost that object, you found that lost object until the neighbors of the lost item will know. Shchina aveda. So the Gemara asks, my shchina shchane aveda, right? What does this phrase mean, neighbors of the lost item? Ilmale shchinim deval aveda. If we say that refers to the neighbors of the owner of the lost item, right? Yada le lezol v'lah, right? He doesn't need to proclaim his find because if the finder knows who lost the item, let him go and return it. In other words, if you're saying, like, you, it's obvious who it is, it's the neighbors of the lost item, someone's going to, right, it's the neighbors, and they'll return it. Elish chayne makom shenim sepo aveda. So rather, it's talking about neighbors of the place where the lost item was found. In other words, wherever it is, you need to publicize it in a way that people who live in that area, right, presumably where the owner would be from, would know that that
what's interesting to me is Rabbi Meir seems to make more sense. I don't quite understand
Rabbi Yehuda's because it seems to be Yerushalayim, but again, if you found a lost object like 2 days away from Yerushalayim,
so to me, Rabbi Meir's opinion seems to make a little bit more sense.
But you know, then the Gemara from there goes to explain Rabbi Yehuda's opinion.
I think the Jerusalem observation is essential here, except for that I'm not sure that I have, you know, any dramatic explanation as to why. I agree with you that it seems kind of like, I don't know, not out of context, but like providing a context that we wouldn't have expected that doesn't seem to be the crux of the issue, except for that suddenly there it is.
Right. It's suddenly there. I do want to point out one thing about the Rabbi Yehuda discussion. I'm not reading it, but the way they start off the discussion is fascinating. They start quoting a Mishnah from Tanit about when we start praying for rain and how it relates to when the pilgrims would go back. I just found it to be like a fascinating comparison because it's like in a totally different context of like thinking about how long it took people to travel back and forth. And there it says it's 15 days as opposed to the 3 days of this Mishnah. So just pay attention to that. And it talks about that one is from the first Beit HaMikdash, one is from the second Beit HaMikdash. It's a great discussion in the Gemara.
Okay. I'm going to actually pick up. I know we're kind of a little bit back and forthing in here because I wanted to lead into the Jerusalem point or follow up on the Jerusalem point, which comes after this discussion that you're talking about. Towards the very end of this Gemara, on the top of Amud Bet, before you get to the next Mishnah, we have a discussion about Jerusalem proper. And maybe that provides a little bit of context that could shed light backwards onto why Jerusalem is here. I'm not sure that is not reading too much in. Tana Rabbanan Barishona, Kol Mishmatza Aveda, Haya Machriz Aleh Shlosha Regalim. So Barishona means at first, meaning back in the day, a long time ago, initially, if somebody found a lost object, then the assumption is here, or the given here is in Jerusalem, but it doesn't say that in the text, they would publicize it over the course of the three regalim, of the three pilgrimage festivals, v'achar regal acharon shiva yamim, and after the last of those three, another 7 days, kedei she'elech shlosha v'yachzor shlosha v'yachriz yom echad, in order that you could end up with somebody who needs to like get home, right? So that they would have time to they could be traveling for 3 days. They'll get back to Jerusalem and that could be 3 days. I mean, if they left and then they come back and then he can proclaim the fact that he's lost an item, you know, for 1 day. So obviously the pilgrimage festivals are unique to Jerusalem. But beyond that, I feel like, wait, why are we focusing our lost object issue in Jerusalem? Because everywhere in the world, people could lose things and find things. So my question, your question, Yordana, is still hovering over my head here.
Yeah, I'm going to interrupt you here for a minute. I agree with you. I think it's interesting, this whole Yerushalayim thing. But as you read this, you know, I think the idea is that you don't, even if you find an object in your town, you don't really know who left it there. And I think it says something very beautiful about Jerusalem, that the idea that it sort of was this communal place that you knew every Jew was going to have to show up at some point. So that's why you would bring these lost items there, because everybody has to be there at some point. And I think as you continue with what you're going to say, Anne, we're going to see just how beautifully Yerushalayim is actually spoken about.
Mishacharav Beit HaMikdash, Shiyabane b'mheira b'yameinu, Hidkinu shiyu machriznim b'vatei knesiot b'vatei midrashot. And so now the Gemara like takes that step back and says, oh right, people could lose things all over the world. And there was a time when the temple was destroyed. And then this is fascinating, that in the middle of this, you know, Tanaitic source, it says, the temple was destroyed, may it be rebuilt speedily in our days, which is kind of the way people will say, like, and how are you feeling? And, you know, well, I hurt my leg, but thank God I'm doing well. The thank God I'm doing well is shoved in there because we're people of faith or whatever, right? The idea that the writer here says, may it be rebuilt speedily in our days is an anomaly in a way that I find to be very fascinating. And I guess you could sit down with manuscripts and figure out exactly when this was included. And it doesn't really go back to the Tanaim who were feeling the loss of the Beit HaMikdash, of the temple. And then, right, so then they had to decree that if you find lost objects, you go to your synagogue, your local Beit Midrash, your Jewish center of religious life. And at that point, you would declare that you lost your item under those settings. Mishrabua anasim, itkinu shiyu modi'in, l'shchenav miyuadav v'dayo. And then, as the oppressors proliferated, right, as the Jewish life became more tenuous, I guess, under oppression, then maybe you couldn't go to your synagogue or your Beit Midrash to proclaim that you've lost an item. So instead, the sages decreed that if you find a lost item, tell your neighbors, tell your friends, tell whoever you can, and that will be sufficient, meaning that will accomplish the requirement of declaring and proclaiming that you have found this lost item. It's an interesting question, right? Because we haven't talked about this enough, or maybe at all, really. How does one go about declaring and proclaiming that you have found something? And this says, well, we understand that you might not want to be in a, you might end up in a situation where you don't want to draw attention to yourself. And in that case, you can spread the word in a more quiet manner and it will still count. The Gemara goes on to explain or to ask about this oppression, right? Maishrabu anasin. What does that mean from the time that these oppressors multiplied? Avedata lamalka. So the Gemara says, well, that's when they say that the lost, that there was a principle, I guess, or in those times where they would, the assumption was or the given was that any lost item belonged to the king, right? So then you couldn't necessarily claim that you'd lost something or claim that you'd found something, because the moment it was found, it would go to the monarchy. Now, this seems to be under, I'm not sure. I have some interesting footnotes here that talk about when any treasure, let's say, would belong to the monarch, but under the Roman system, which is, of course, you know, the Romans are the ones who destroyed the Second Temple, so then those lost items automatically belong to the finder. Maybe that's where we get finders keepers. And so this is a little bit, again, like, it's not exactly clear when or under which legal system the Gemara is talking about when it says that there was an issue here. But again, there was a time where the Gemara is addressing the phenomenon of a lost item belonging to the king, and then they wanted to make sure that things wouldn't get confiscated just because you found it, right? So now the Gemara goes into this narrative. Rabbi Ami Ashkach Udaya de Dinare, Chazei Hahu Rama Deka Mirtat. So Rabbi Ami found a vessel, some kind of jug, that was filled with dinar, with money, coins. And a Roman saw that, and he was wary to take it. Why am I lay zeal shkol in afshech de lo persai anan de amri aveda talamalka? So the Romans saw that, so that he was worried to pick it up, that Rabbi Ami didn't want to pick it up. I'm sorry, I think I said that incorrectly, but right, the Romans saw that Rabbi Ami doesn't want to pick up this thing that he found because it's just going to be confiscated. The Roman says, no, take it for yourself. We are not, and perhaps this gives us the clue into which monarchy is doing what. We are not the Persei. We are not the Persians who say that the lost item belongs to the king. So the Gemara is, I don't know, it's a lot of fancy footwork with the times, with the epochs, right? Epochs in history, because the Persians preceded the Babylonians, but the Gemara itself is being put together under in Bavel, which has the history, you know, the remnants of the earlier Persian law, culture, everything. So I don't have a clear answer as to what's going on here, except for that the Gemara presents it like we Romans are the better people, right? We Romans are the ones who will say finders keepers, as opposed to the Persians before us who would say any lost item goes to the king. And then we've got another breakdown that gives another, which basically gives us the lost and found of this era, of the Tanaitic era. Tana Rabbanan, Evan To'an Haita B'Yerushalayim, Kol Misha Avdalo Aveda, Nifne L'sham. There was a place, there was a stone that was called like the that's where you would go to make your claim. And if you lost something, so then you would go there to that stone, to that Bakol Mishumatse Aveda Nifne L'sham, and anybody who found something would go there as well. Zo made Umachri, Zo made Venotin Simanin Venotla. Somebody stands there and says, hello, I found this, and the next guy comes forward and says, oh, it does it have this and this distinguishing mark that I know that my item had? And then he would, you know, say yes and take it home and everybody would be happy. Vizohi Shishaninu Tsuru im Nimchit Evan Hatoan. And that's where there's a Mishnah in Tanit, which we saw, you know, a long time ago, I don't know when, 2 years ago, a year ago, and it, no more, and says, go see if the claimant stone has been, was covered up by rising water, right? Meaning, because it was in Tanit, we're talking about to what degree were they concerned about, you know, drought and the water rising, and that claimant stone is exactly this place, apparently in Jerusalem, right? Meaning, where they would go, I don't know where it is, but where they would go and stand there to proclaim the lost item and or finding it. Okay, we're going to put all that aside. We have a Mishnah. We have two new Mishnahs before we get to the end of this stuff. Here's the first one. Amar et aveda velo amar simaneha lo yiten lo. If somebody comes forward to claim a lost object and he describes the item, but he doesn't give any distinguishing marks, so you don't give it to him. Like, that's not enough of a proof. And if you have somebody who's known to be a trickster or a swindler, so then even if he knows the distinguishing marks, you should not give it to him. Because wait until there's a verse in Deuteronomy chapter 22, right? Again, that says specifically, you have to know until your brother, Adrush Achicha, until your brother claims. So the Mishnah interprets this to say, Ad Shetidrush et Achicha im Ramayhu im Eino Ramay. So the issue is that you want to like delve into, to investigate. This person to determine whether he's a swindler, whether he's not a swindler. Because somebody who's being tricksy about it, you know, is going to walk off with something that's not his because he could somehow manage to claim, to specify the distinguishing marks. Okay. The Gemara here goes through several different cases of, you know, when somebody would proclaim something and somebody would come forward exactly as you would expect. And then about halfway through, a little bit more than that, we get into a case of a Ramai, somebody who's a swindler and who can claim the distinguishing remarks. And then the question goes on, you know, what's going to happen? But I'm going to gloss over all of that to get to the next Mishnah in the interest of time. Kol davar shosev ochel, yasev yochal. So if you find a living cold, the premise again is that you're finding something. What is it that you're finding? Kol davar shosev ochel. Something that works and then also eats, and the idea here is that what he's working at will provide enough income, I guess, to provide for his food. Yaseh v'yochal, then it's going to work and eat. V'davar she'enoso v'ochel, and something that doesn't work and eat, yimacher, then that should be sold. Meaning, again, we're talking about animals, right? And we're talking about how you cover the expense of having these animals. And we're talking specifically, if you're talking about something that's been found, if you found, let's say, a cow or a chicken, right? These are animals that cover themselves, basically, right? Because by providing milk, eggs, and so on, you can actually do better by having this newfound animal because it will cover its own costs, so to speak, because you can either you can eat from it, I mean, you can eat from its eggs and the milk and so on, or you can then sell the milk and the eggs and do even better that way, right? You've got more benefit by having it than by not having it. But if the animal that you found doesn't cover itself, doesn't provide any revenue to you, then that's when you can say, you know, go look to sell it. Then you can to try to return it to the original owner and then even get the money back that you've expended on taking care of the animal until you find the original owner. A different kind of animal. I don't know what kind of the kinds of animals that I can think of that might not be particularly helpful in your farm or your yard or whatever are also the kind of animals that I don't think would wander into your house. Like my son is very depressed, not really depressed, but that our fish are very boring, right? He very badly wanted fish and they're very boring because they're goldfish and that's what they are. They're boring. They don't do anything to contribute to the household, certainly not to the revenue. But on the other hand, they wouldn't get here if we hadn't brought them in. So I'm not sure what kind of animal would be in this category. In any case, mayhe bedamim, the Gemara says, what do you do then with when you sell the animal? What do you do with that money? Because somebody still lost that animal, right? And so now you can't, what if you can't return the animal to the original owner, but you've sold it because you don't have to pay to keep the animal that's going to, right? Like you found an animal that's now going to be a drain on your own household. You don't have to keep it. You can sell it. What do you do with that money? Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Yishtamesh Behen. So Rabbi Tarfon says you could use it, you could use that money, but then if he loses that money, then he would have to pay restitution to the original owner if he comes to claim. Rabbi Akiva Omer, lo yishtamesh behen, lefichach im avdo, ein chayav ba'achriutan. And Rabbi Akiva says the opposite. He says you can't use that money, I mean you have to hold on to it, I guess, for the original owner, and then if it gets lost, you don't have to pay, meaning you've set it aside and that's good enough. If there's a hurricane that comes and the storm takes the money away, you are no longer liable for it to the original owner should the original owner come forward. Now, the Gemara delves into exactly some of these questions that I've raised in reading the Mishnah in terms of, you know, when you're talking about a cow versus a donkey, when you're talking about baby animals, maybe baby animals are not yet earning their keep. So that might be the kind of animal that would actually be, you know, not contributing to the household better than fish, our fish anyway. And likewise, right, the question of if we're talking about chickens and then it gets into a whole discussion of what if you have geese, what if you have roosters, and those are different, you know, they're all fowl, but they have different terms, at least here towards the bottom of our daf. Dark.